This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, October 11th, 2019. Later this hour, Crystals at Crystal Bridges, conducting Harry Potter music at the Amp, and Foggy Bobcat in the Furman Garner Performance Studio. And after our hour, stay with 91.3 for Science Friday. This week, why should people put their trust in science? A new book delves into that question, plus the backstory behind this week's planned power outages in California and more. Science Friday begins at 1 this afternoon, following Ozarks at Large. And a reminder, KUAF's new weekend schedule begins tomorrow. You won't notice a change until 11 tomorrow morning when It's Been a Minute with Sam Sanders debuts. Following that, Milk Street Radio at noon, Rick Steves Travel at 1, Radio Lab joins KUAF programming tomorrow at 2, Hidden Brain at 3. Latino USA will move, beginning this weekend, to Sunday afternoons at 3. Full schedule at KUAF.com. Arkansas Fest 2019 begins in less than 24 hours. The annual gathering includes a best-tasting salsa contest, more food, and live music. Activities begin at 11:30 tomorrow morning, last until 5, and it's supposed to be sunny and warmer tomorrow. Keep that in mind. All of the events are at Shiloh Square in downtown Springdale. Proceeds benefit One Community. You can find out more at onecommunityar.org. This is Ozarks at Large. An important but perhaps underappreciated migration in the country's history took thousands of people west on the Overland Trail. In the mid-19th century, stagecoaches, horses, mules, wagons, and often just a person's feet took people from places like Atchison, Kansas, to the west. Next week, Elliot West, a distinguished professor of history at the University of Arkansas, will discuss the Overland Trail in an Honors College mic lecture. The talk is Tuesday at 5:15 p.m. in the Gerhardt Hall Auditorium on the U of A campus, and it's open to the public. Recently, he came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to give us a preview. He says the Overland Trail, at its height, was a busy corridor.
The estimates now of the number of people who made this crossing from the Missouri Valley over to the Pacific Coast into Utah, between 1841 and 1860, is right at one-third of a million people, about 330,000 persons. And for each person, there were typically, we can average about 2 to 3 animals, oxen, horses, cattle, sheep, so maybe a million animals. That's as if this started in 1841. It's as if everyone living in 1840 in Arkansas and in Michigan just took off and walked from Missouri to California and to Oregon.
All right, these aren't modes of transportation that are fueled by fossil fuels, but nonetheless, such a migration has to have an effect on the landscape and I guess the indigenous people that were already in these places.
It had an enormous effect on both the environment and Indian peoples along the way, and both of those effects were absolutely catastrophic. The Great Overland Trail was along the Platte River through Nebraska and then up through Wyoming, over what's called South Pass and the Continental Divide in Wyoming, down into the Great Basin and up into Oregon, through Idaho into Oregon, and then over the Cascade Mountains and the Sierra Nevada. The effect of that many people crowding along these same trails now. They're following the same routes. It devoured all of the trees, virtually all of the grass in those areas. The Platte River had been this probably the greatest natural highway in North America, lined with great groves of cottonwoods and hardwoods that were very important for the Indian peoples there. By the mid to late 1850s, there was not a single tree left. All trees were gone. There were two. Paradoxically, there were two lone trees, but then both those were cut within a couple of years. The landscape, the land, was. You're talking now, of course, about hundreds of thousands of wagon wheels, iron-rimmed wagon wheels, and the hooves of oxen, and it just turns this thing up. It just abrades it down to nothing. Some of these oxen were walking knee deep in dust. there was a. One of the most marketable items in these jumping-off places were goggles. People would wear goggles and wear bandanas across their faces to keep from choking and going blind from the dust churned up by all of this. This was a huge, huge undertaking.
What did goggles in the mid-19th century look like? What were they made of? I didn't know they existed.
You know, I've never seen them.
Okay.
I mean, I guess you can go on eBay or something and look for them. But
yeah.
But the ones they were described as sort of bulky, you know, and glass. Not plastic, of course, but glass.
So I imagine manifest destiny plays a role in the move. Economic opportunity, people wanting to leave the East.
Yeah.
Why are they leaving?
Well, it's the nature of the migration changes dramatically in 1849. It begins in 1841. For the first 7 years, 1841 to 48, almost all of these people moving west are farm families. They're coming typically out of the Midwest and the Upper South, and they're heading to Oregon, some to California, some to the Central Valley in California, but most of them to Oregon, to the Willamette Valley, this fabulously, fabulously fertile area there. And those are mostly families. 1848, the United States acquires California, and then within 200 hours of us signing the treaty that gives us California, a man named James Marshall discovers gold on the American River. And by 1849, the word is out by 1849, and so the number increases from a few thousand in 1848 to around 50,000 in 1849. And these are virtually all men, 90%, 90 to 95% men. And over the next few years, it's this massive male migration. And then around the middle of the 1850s, it changes back. The opportunity in California begins to fade. At the same time, there is now a thriving population in California and on the Pacific Coast. And that, in turn, draws families out of the Midwest. They see a opportunity again, but it's a different kind of opportunity now to take part in this large society, large and growing and evolving society.
How long would it take if you left, say here, and you were headed to Oregon?
Mm-hmm.
That had to be a massive undertaking.
It's a long time. if you were to leave from here, you would probably there was a trail out of actually right around here. It started in Cave Springs.
Really?
And it's called the Cherokee Trail. It goes over through, cuts in through part of Oklahoma.
Goes into up Colorado?
Pardon me?
Does it go into Colorado?
It does.
Yeah.
It follows the Arkansas River. It goes up to Kansas and follows the Arkansas River to the Rockies and then up the face of the Rockies up to the Great Overland Trail up in Wyoming. But almost the great majority of these people left from western Missouri, and they left from places like Independence, Westport, mm-hmm. Atchison. So you would leave from here, and it would take you a while to get up there. And then once you leave there, it varies over time, of course. The time needed to cross shortens over the years, but averaging about 4 to 5 months of passage.
You mentioned that the first migration, 90 to 95% men. Did women begin to come later?
Well, again, the first migration from 41 to 48 was families.
Those okay.
Men and women. It was just a typical profile of a farm families of that period. Then in 1849, it becomes heavily male, and then it begins to move back in the other direction, back to the original pattern in the middle of 1850s. So initially, at least, and then later, it's both men and women and children.
What sort of community or communities develop because you're going to a place where there haven't been as many people,
uh-huh.
and now suddenly a lot of people are showing up?
Yeah, you're talking about the destination.
Yeah.
Well, it varies about where you're talking about. If you're talking about the family migrations to Oregon and then later into California, they begin to establish communities much like the ones they left behind. If you're talking about the men getting mm-hmm. those mining camps in California, that's a very different experience. Those were some of the most bizarre swarmings that you can imagine in American history.
Well, yeah, we hear about Deadwood and places like this that were lawless and, you know.
Well, those are a bit exaggerated, although I have to say I love the TV program Deadwood. A bit exaggerated, but they were. They're just profoundly strange. They were the most heavily male-dominated communities or gathering. I'm sure you can call them communities, mm-hmm. Gatherings in American history. They were the most transient. Typically, 90% of the people living in there at any one time would be gone within a few years. They were the ones where there was the least consistent community institutions. That was the first things I wrote about a long time ago, 40 years ago, more than 40 years ago when I first started in this. And I found them absolutely, absolutely fascinating. I couldn't quite decide whether these were, in fact, something you could call a community and what's the common in it in the community. Yeah.
Were there any changes that then took place because so many people left, you know, the middle part of the country? Did the departure areas, did they change?
There was some. The most interesting one, and there's been some really fascinating studies on this lately, are the effects on the women who remain behind, especially with the gold rush and later gold and silver strikes in the West. You get a lot of families in which the husband and father just takes off. The idea he'll go out there and within a couple of years he'll make a bunch of money and he'll come back and everybody will be happy. Far more often than not, he was gone much longer than that. Sometimes he never came back. But the effect of that then was to leave these women with the kinds of male responsibilities that they had never had before. The term for them often is used as the women in waiting. Mm-hmm. And they begin to take on these new responsibilities. Sometimes they didn't like it. A lot of times they did. So one of the things this did, I think, over time was to shuffle up gender relations, you know, to unsettle the traditional roles of men and women, husbands and wives, during this period. There's an interesting parallel here between this overland migration, male overland migration on the one hand, and the Civil War on the other. These two things happen pretty much back to back. In both cases, you know, you see tens of thousands of men, husbands and fathers, leaving home, and consequently tens of thousands of women left behind who have to suddenly adjust to this new life. And you cannot tell me that that doesn't have some connection to the emergence of a sort of a new feminism in the latter part of the 19th century.
Elliot West, a distinguished professor of history at the University of Arkansas, will discuss the Overland Trail in a public lecture Tuesday evening at 5:15 in the Gerhard Hall Auditorium on the University of Arkansas campus. The talk is free. It's open to the public.
Love like this can't last. Your sweet kiss is too good.
That's the legendary Freddie Cole. And I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host every Friday and Saturday here on KUAF for Shades of Jazz. Join me for an exclusive interview with this icon of jazz music. We talk about his brother Nat and his life in music. Shades of Jazz, right here on 91.3 FM, listener-supported KUAF.
It's an experience shared by billions of women around the world, a monthly cycle. But billions of those women also struggle with period poverty. Many live in our area. That's why a local group in Fort Smith is stepping in. Kaylee Davis is part of 16B, a group of young professionals associated with the 646 Downtown organization. She's also one of the organizers behind the Go With The Flow block party this weekend.
We're not necessarily using, you know, period or tampon in the name just because we're trying to make it more approachable for people who don't experience that kind of thing every month. But we did want to kind of insinuate and make it lighthearted and fun.
The block party to end period poverty is going to be held on Sunday from noon to 3 at Bell Star Antiques in downtown Fort Smith. Davis says the event is going to benefit 3 shelters in the city: Next Step Homeless Services, Riverview Hope Campus, and Fort Smith Crisis Intervention Center.
We are collecting all menstrual health products like tampons, pads, menstrual cups, but we are asking for tampons primarily because they are the most needed item and least donated item for the shelters.
Davis says menstrual health products are not at the top of the list when people are buying items to donate to those in need.
When you are donating to a shelter, oftentimes food, hygiene basics such as soap, shampoos, body wash, clothes, just general items tend to be the first things that we donate and that we think of when we donate to shelters, whereas more personal items such as tampons and pads is not something that really comes to mind.
For every box of tampons you bring to donate at the block party, Davis says you'll get 2 raffle tickets worth $3 each. You can also expect beer, music, face painting, games like sack races, and of course, plenty of raffle items.
Total, we want to get 18,000 tampons. Each shelter said that they would need about 600 boxes, and we just want to round up and make sure that we fulfill that need and go a little further.
Davis says she advocates for menstrual equality and equity because buying period products wasn't always easy for her.
It is personal to me. I no longer face this issue, thankfully. But once upon a time, it was, you know, a struggle for me to wonder, you know, am I going to be able to afford tampons this month?
According to a You Buy Kotex study, 1 in 4 women struggled to buy menstrual health products last year, and 1 in 5 low-income women skipped work or school because of a period.
Those products can't be bought with WIC or SNAP or any kind of government assistance program. So even if they are getting assistance, they are not eligible to buy those items with that.
In Arkansas, period products are also subject to a sales tax because they're considered a luxury item.
So if you go to the store and you buy an apple, you will be taxed less on your groceries than you will on your tampons. On your menstrual health products, you're going to pay 3 times. So that's going to be your state, county, and local. And right now, it appears that no lawmakers in Arkansas have proposed any kind of tampon or menstrual health deal on taxes and things like that, which is disappointing to me, but encouraging because that's something that I could do in the future.
For more information about the 16B event, go to Facebook or Instagram and search for Go With The Flow 2019. This is Ozarks at Large. Crystals and Art, Ancient to Today, a new exhibition at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, opens to the public this weekend. There's a special preview for museum members today. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich gives us a report.
The sprawling and sparkling Crystals and Art exhibit reveals our collective fascination and, in some cases, obsession with quartz crystals over 5 millennia. Lauren Haynes, the museum's curator of contemporary art, who co-organized the complex exhibit, provided a media preview Thursday morning.
For an exhibition like this, where you're blending and getting works from a lot of different places, we're very clear to try to bring in as many different perspectives as we can, but it's only a slight sampling. Works that sort of tell you different qualities, but also are all put together in a way that they've never been put together before.
The exhibit contains 75 pieces from around the world, including geologic specimens, mystical and historic artifacts, and many interpretive artworks. Through a dark entry hall glittering with illuminated pieces collectively titled Sacred and Transcendent, patrons are drawn to a giant video screen close-up of Serbian performance artist Marina Abramović, her face buried beneath and breathing heavily through hundreds of small quartz crystals.
And this is a work from 1997 called Dozing Consciousness.
The next hall, titled Crystal Extravagance, contains functional artifacts and jewelry carved from crystal in China, Egypt, and Europe, all symbols of affluence and power.
They were created by expert artisans, right? So people who were at the very top of their craft and could actually create these very, at times, intimate objects and with very delicate, beautiful designs on them. But it was rare and therefore very expensive to be able to have many of these objects.
A third hall examines the science of crystals and mystical uses, which inevitably leads to a discussion about the museum's name.
We are called Crystal Bridges because Arkansas is the natural state, as well as the state where you can be called the quartz crystal capital of the world.
Central Arkansas is one of a few places on Earth containing a wealth of quartz crystal formed 200 million years ago beneath the Washtenaw Mountains, where it continues to be commercially mined. Quartz is valued as a gemstone for certain physical properties used in radios, computer chips, and clocks, and for alleged healing properties.
But also wanting to think about the mysticism that's related to crystals, right? So many people believe in and think about the healing powers of crystals.
Crystal gazing balls, of course, appear throughout the exhibit, including in a priceless, famous engraving by German Renaissance printmaker Albrecht Dürer titled Melancholia, on loan to the museum.
And so our fourth section in the exhibition is called Crystallic Form, and it very much is looking at the form of crystals. So the exhibition, the section takes its name from a work by Warner Drews called Crystallic Form. And it's really meant to explore and think about the ways in which artists, starting and thinking about modern artists like Picasso and Juan Gris, two contemporary artists, are exploring and playing with not only the actual form of crystals, but the property of crystals, right? And some of the things that we have come to know crystals from. So these two works that I'm standing in front of, this Pablo Picasso guitar and Juan Gris guitar on a table, are very much exploring and looking at this idea of crystal cubism.
Related work by American pop artist Andy Warhol also hangs here. The final three halls reveal myriad contemporary works, a massive crystal obelisk, an assemblage of crystal balls of varying sizes, geology field guides purposely drenched in crystals, paintings, and photographs.
It's called Crystal Universe, and really this is the section where we're taking the ideas that we've started thinking about and moving through in the exhibition, but then how do contemporary artists take us to that next level? How do they ask us to really explore things that we maybe would never explore, and this idea of the infinite nature of crystals?
Two massive sculptures by Anthony James are not made of crystal, but provide a sense perception of the mineral.
There are two separate works, same title, Portal Isocahedron, and it's essentially mirrored glass and this steel structure that he's created and LED lights. But again, when you look in this, you don't see yourself, you just really see the infinite nature and seeing the mirrors and seeing the lights sort of reflect over and over again.
The final piece is an immense crystal chandelier placed on a pedestal, fabricated by Chinese artist and activist Ai Weiwei.
Really meant to think about and ask us to explore this idea of extravagance, right? Knowing that crystal chandeliers are extravagant by nature, but thinking about what it would mean to actually have one of this scale, and really asking us to think about where is that line and how do you take something that is so precious and so interesting like crystals, but then what does it mean to have it be extravagant, and what does that say about our society, and really playing on this idea that, you know, you can have something that is so beautiful and you enjoy looking at it, but then as you look at it, it really makes you think about, okay, well, what is my place in all this, and how am I thinking about my role in where society is?
Just in case, patrons can physically examine a collection of large crystals arranged on a tabletop in one of the galleries, containing key interpretation.
The desire to touch is very, very heavy. So wanting to make sure we give people a moment to do that while they're sitting, looking at the catalog, looking at the timeline, and maybe spending some time engaging with these crystals that are very adhered to the table. But so, so don't worry.
Crystals in Art, Ancient to Today, will remain on view at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art through January 6th. Various lectures and workshops are planned through mid-December. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
It's 29 minutes after 12.
KUAF is supported by Dog Party USA, hosting their annual Customer Appreciation Halloween Party, Saturday, October 19th at 5:30 p.m. This costume party for dogs and their parents features live music, dinner, refreshments, contests, games, and more. Vaccinated and friendly dogs are welcome to attend. This year's theme is RuPaul's Wag Race. 306-4660 for more information. NWA Ballet Theater presents Immortal Beloved, Possessed by Genius, Friday and Saturday, October 11th and 12th at 8 p.m. at Theater Squared in Fayetteville. Depicting the story of Beethoven's genius, turmoil, and muses through a moving portrait of dance, this production includes work by international choreographer Stephanie Martinez and roster of 24 artists. NWAballet.com for tickets and information.
It's Friday, October 11th, 2019. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
Wasn't autumn beautiful? The 2 days?
Once it finally got here.
Tuesday and Wednesday were beautiful.
You know, Tuesday was probably the quintessential autumn day.
I
imagine some people would have liked it just a bit crisper, but it was blue skies, a slight breeze, and then...
Yeah, and now it feels like winter.
Okay, unpopular opinion, I already miss August. I know a lot of people don't go with me on that, but I'm
going to roll up my script and whack you with it.
Okay.
If you're missing fall, though, and you think 2 days was insufficient.
Yes.
Here are some things that are guaranteed to make you feel like fall in the Ozarks.
Put you in a fall frame of mind.
Exactly.
Let's go.
Hillbilly.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not tonight. Maybe tomorrow.
You know what, though? I think, you know, back when Walker Russo was here and Hillbilly, I think if you go to one of these festivals, you know that you're going to maybe have to weather some challenges.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember back in the day when Kevin Kinder used to go to cover them for us and mud and...
Yeah.
But this is the 6th annual Hillbilly Harvest Moon Festival up by Eureka Springs. It includes performers like Handmade Moments and Leftover Salmon and Eureka Springs' favorite Chucky Wags and Yonder Mountain String Band and Railroad Earth and Opal Agafia and the Sweet Nothings and the Del McCurry Band. And tickets start at $60.
And you can be there as long as you want.
Yeah. And they're like the performance schedule goes until like 11:45 at night.
Yeah.
I haven't seen 11:45 at night for years. But this is a guaranteed fall thing.
I agree.
A House in Mourning.
Mm-hmm.
This is the event that they do this time every year at the Rogers Historical Museum. And it's not supposed to be a haunted thing. It's supposed to be an educational thing. It's set at the turn of the 20th century in the Hawkins House, which is part of the museum. And the house is decorated, set, as though there's been a death in the family.
And so it's about how mourning took place a century or so ago.
So the exhibit runs through November 2nd, and then the weekend of the 17th and 18th of October and the 25th and 26th, there will be costumed interpreters playing roles like the funeral director and the embalmer. I'm going to stay away. It depends on how bad I look that day. House in Mourning lasts through November 2nd. It's free. You can find out more at 621-1154. Last weekend was Junk Ranch.
Yes.
This weekend is Vintage Market Days.
Tell me more about Vintage Market Days.
This takes place at the Benton County Fairgrounds, and it's not the classic arts and crafts of War Eagle. Mm-hmm. This is the upcycled.
So you've taken something that might have its use expired, but now you've created it into something else.
You've taken an old multi-pane window and you've done some paint on it, okay, and you've done some things to it, or it's clothing or it's jewelry or it's decor or it's outdoor furnishings. It's just fun. It's 10 to 5 today and tomorrow and until 4 on Sunday, and it's $10 to get in today because you get the good stuff, mm-hmm, theoretically, and $5 for Saturday or Sunday, and it's fun. Pea Ridge Mule Jump.
World Championship.
Sure sign of fall. If you've never seen a mule jump, by golly, they can do it. They start at 9 o'clock tomorrow, and then the pro jump will begin later in the day around 1 o'clock, and it is the World Championship.
You bet.
And it's $5 for adults, $2 for kids to get in. There's an opening reception tomorrow night in Eureka Springs. Zeke Taylor has a show at the Eureka Springs Fine Art Gallery, mm-hmm, but it's also the Saturday Stroll, so all sorts of interesting things. And he's moved into doing some portraiture.
Right.
Which is interesting. This weekend is also Puppets in the Park, which has now moved to Gully Park. Used to be in Wilson Park for
years.
Now go
to Gully. Oh, right on the trail.
Yeah.
Well, I guess Wilson's on the trail, too, so.
Papa Rap and Shaky Bugs and Magic and Stories and Trike Theater all afternoon on Sunday. But before that, at 7 o'clock on Saturday at Phoenix Fayetteville, there's a Puppet Slam.
Now, I know about poetry slams. Tell me, a Puppet Slam sounds like it might destroy the puppets.
I was so afraid he was going to go there. It is, and I quote, a contemporary short-form puppet theater for adult audiences.
Okay.
It's $5 to get in.
All right.
How fun would that be?
I
don't know that that feels like fall,
know, but
it certainly feels like something different.
Yes, it does.
So we'll come up with some other things for Sunday.
Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
Poet Saeed Jones is out with a new memoir. It's about men in his life who have hurt him. He says violent, dangerous men in all our lives, we can't just get rid of them.
He is speeding down the highway, you know, swerving. He is not just dangerous to himself, he's dangerous to every other person on the road.
Saeed Jones on Manhood. Next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
It's Been a Minute with Sam Sanders begins tomorrow morning at 11 on 91.3. Harry Potter fans can experience one of the films in the popular series in a new way this weekend. Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban in concert at the Walmart Amp tomorrow night will feature a live symphony orchestra. Shi Hong Young is back at the Amp to conduct the musicians. He's been here to conduct live scores for Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone and Star Wars A New Hope. Rehearsals began last night, and this morning Shi Hong Young, a graduate of Juilliard and State University of New York Stony Brook, came back to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. He says these performances remind us music can be a character in films.
Music definitely is a major part of the storytelling in the movie process when audience sees it, but when you hear it and it makes you soar through the skies with the music, with the hippogriff, you know, and that type of feeling. Oh, I think sonic wise, visualized, that combination is really what brings the magic for that.
And I think it's a different experience because if you see, say, I don't know, Psycho in a theater, and the music's there. You know it's there, but you don't know it's there. It's kind of hidden as well.
Right.
But when it's live performing musicians and singers in front of you, I think it's totally different.
Well, for sure. You get to feel their energy. You see them working very hard, and you're there with them at the moment. The audience have a live backstage pass of to see the exact making of, and like you say, when you see the movie Psycho, you expect when we revisit a movie that in films that we know, we expect to hear certain things that we're familiar with, and so when you do hear that in the performance, and now you realize, oh, the flute is doing that, mm-hmm. Oh, that's how that was being made. And then, you know, and you could relate to it quicker. And I think that's the special moment for the audience in a live performance like this.
You have vocalists this time too, right?
Yes, this time we have a chorus that joining us. So they will feature, you know, there is on screen, there is a choir from Hogwarts. So they will sing along, you know, represent that. And this is John Williams' third and last film of the Harry Potter series. So he really utilized all of his assets to help that.
What are the last 10 minutes before showtime for you like?
Do you have
a routine or?
Well, usually by then I'm changed already. I get, you know, I do always pray. I do, you know, it's a ritual, but for me, it's a calming, you know, knowing that, you know, I always feel very blessed that I get to do this and get to share this, my talent and to bring this to the audience. But I know that I could never have done this by myself. So I pray every time before I go on stage. I think it's the same when they make a cross, when they cross home plate and hit a home run. It's, you know, it's a reassurance for me. And I try to stay as focused and clear of, you know, what I have of just the task at hand. Nothing that happens in the past or in the future it matters for me at that moment. 10 minutes before show, usually this is where I need to get in action, you know, it's showtime. So everybody focus and we start the performance from there.
Well, welcome back to Northwest Arkansas.
Thank you.
Please come back when you come back again.
I will.
Shi Hong Young will conduct the symphony for Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban in concert at the Walmart Amp tomorrow night. Gates at 5:30. The film starts at 7. Tickets begin at $22. The Bentonville High School Chamber Singers are performing as part of this year's production under the direction of Terry Hicks, Director of Choirs for Bentonville High School.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The Alma Performing Arts Center presents Beautiful, the Carole King Musical, Wednesday, October 16th at 7:30 p.m. From composing a string of pop classics to her own life-changing, chart-busting success with Tapestry, Beautiful, the Carole King musical, takes you back to where it all began. Tickets and more information available at almapac.org or 632-2129. Circle of Life will host its third annual Wave of Light ceremony Tuesday, October 15th at 6:30 p.m. at Orchards Park Pavilion in Bentonville. The Remembrance of Pregnancy and Infant Loss will include memorial service with music, readings, candle lighting, and a memory walk. All are welcome to attend. NWACircleOfLife.org or 750-6632 for information.
This is Ozarks at Large. Foggy Bobcat is a four-piece rock band from Fayetteville, and they've been around a few years. In that time, they've played in different corners of Arkansas, and although they've previously played at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville, tonight they'll headline a show there for the first time. This week, David Miller, Sawyer Henson, Matthew Cunningham, and Kyle Hunter came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio to sit down with Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis.
yeah, yeah. All right.
Together, y'all are Foggy Bobcat. First of all, what is a Foggy Bobcat?
Good question.
So, I have a stuffed bobcat, taxidermied bobcat, that was given to me as a gift. And the band is named after that. Me and Matthew were talking one night, and
quite,
we talked
quite
about
inebriated.
Strapping a fog machine to the bobcat.
Can I mention the fact that we were inebriated? Is that okay?
That's true.
Is that okay?
Yeah, so, that's fine.
All right,
that's
we were inebriated.
That's the name right there.
Okay. Yeah. How did y'all come together as a band?
Kyle and I were in an older band at the time called Molten Mama, and I fronted that one, and Kyle played bass. And
it's like a indie Tame Impala, like, party psych band.
Yeah, good times. But halfway through Molten Mama, we kind of decided that we had other ideas in mind, you know, like, and we needed to get them out somehow. So we started thinking about side projects, and then I moved in with Sawyer, and Sawyer liked to hit things real hard, so he became the drummer. And then Kyle's like, I got a gunslinger in mind that could come play some guitar for us. And we met David, and we hated him, but, you know, yeah, we kept him anyway. And that was probably almost 4 years ago now.
Almost. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Coming up, like, this
January.
Yeah.
Okay. When y'all came out with an album, what was it, last year?
Yeah, it was, like, it was two EPs on the same disc. So our first one called Almost Live, and then our latest one called That Voodoo, and we did a double release.
First one with Ice Blink Recording, and second one with East Hall.
Live track with East Hall, yeah.
Yeah. Those are on Spotify, and I believe Apple Music, yeah. And, you know, all the little forums.
So y'all are playing a gig at George's this Friday, right?
Yes.
Indeed.
Playing with a couple of local, well, kind of semi-regional bands, I guess.
Yeah, we got Me Like Bees.
The Heavyweight.
And J.D. Clayton.
It's gonna be a crazy show. It's going to be a really, really good show. Okay. If you haven't seen the Bees, though, you should check it out because they're amazing.
Yes.
Fantastic.
And we're honestly, it's like a huge honor that we even get to play with them. And it's crazy that they ended up jumping on our bill. and it's going to be a really good night.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We're going to try not to mess some stuff up. You know, we should be fine.
But maybe mess up.
Doors are going to be at 8:30. Yeah. Music's going to start around 9:30, 10-ish.
Yeah, yeah, somewhere in there.
And what is it? $12 for pre-sale tickets.
I think it's 10 pre-sale, 12 at the door.
Tickets are available on our Facebook link about the show. If you go to Foggy Bobcat on Facebook, you'll find it.
Now, this isn't your first time to play George's, though, right?
No. So we played George's quite a few times, front and backstage. But this will be our first headlining backstage George's show, especially on that juicy weekend slot.
Yeah.
And I've often, you know, since I've been playing music, kind of just daydreamed about when I'd get to do this, so... Yeah.
It's a real honor. And thank you to George's Majestic Lounge also. Yeah. Thank you all for supporting it.
Brian's the man.
And thank you for having us.
Of course.
Yeah, no, thank you to Tim.
Well, thank you for coming
Tim.
In.
Tim!
Now that you're playing George's, what's your next dream? What's the next goalpost?
I think we're going to try to start getting out more. Hitting up Kansas City, Tulsa, Little Rock, St. Louis, all
the
that
idea
stuff.
Is going to be exposure, for yeah. sure. Yeah. I mean, so, at this point, like we've got some songs.
Got a strong home base as well.
Got a strong home base. People seem to like us around here, and I think we have a kind of music that people might be interested in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And on the kind of the down low, we'll be, you know, might be working on forming an LP soon.
Yeah. Yeah. First debut
no
LP. Dates.
That's in the works.
No. Yeah. No time frame or anything.
No idea. Correct.
It's very early in the works, yeah. but in the works.
Still stacking cheddar at the moment. You know?
I got you.
Because we're going to actually throw some... A decent amount of money at this album.
Well, can people expect to hear maybe some of the songs off of that future effort this weekend?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. As well as the material we already have available on Spotify and, you know, yada. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're going to be playing some new tunes. One in particular we're pretty proud of. And yeah, dude.
Well, what are y'all looking forward to about this weekend?
Ooh. So, I mean, kind of, in my mind, reaching a status that is important for local bands, you know, because we've all been into the music scene, you know, watching the greats get up there and do their thing. So it kind of feels like we're
accomplishing a big goal
and stepping into another realm, leveling up a little bit. I don't want to put that much weight behind it, but, you know, we have grinded. And also, we couldn't do it without the killer fan base that we've got going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And other than that, you know, just getting real messed up and having a good time.
Playing some loud music.
Yeah. I'm really excited to get up on stage. And after, you know, the small break we took where David, you know, needed to take some time.
Yeah.
You know,
had a baby girl.
Yep.
I don't have emotional problems.
Congratulations,
Olivia.
Thanks.
She's gorgeous.
Appreciate that.
Really excited to, now that we're, you know, back on the grind, to show everybody this energy that we've got now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned your music's available on Spotify. Where else can people find your music, find out more about your band?
Just about everywhere.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Man, we actually have a song that we just released not too long ago called Stay Cool, which I think we're going to play later today.
Yeah.
And it was a recording from Charlotte, and we just got that out. People can check that out.
It's on our YouTube page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're the only Foggy Bobcat out there, so if you Google Foggy Bobcat, you'll find us.
Yeah.
We are Foggy Bobcat, and this next one's called Stay Cool.
Jokes, the smoke, you choke and you swallow. Nights and days, spent in the haze, trying to act your age, whatever that means. No, it's hard, yes, I know it's hard, but you'll do fine. If you give yourself the time to take back what you've promise. Be that as it may, be that as it may, be that as it may, you will still be alright if you just take your. Be that as it may, be that as it may, be that as it may. Just give yourself the time. Take back what you've done wrong. I know it hurts sometimes, but stay cool and carry on. 'Cause yourself is just fine. No need to be someone else. Take caution now, my love, and be there in the moment. But from here on out, I know they controlled you, they bought and they sold you. From here on out, the world, the stars, it's yours, it's ours, all worth taking, unless you let them take it, and they will try to take it away, my baby. But like it if you lose, stick around, you won't lose, we can do it if you just give yourself the time. Take back what you've done wrong. And I know it hurts sometimes, but stay cool and carry on. 'Cause yourself is just fine. No need to be someone else. Take caution now, my love, and be there in the moment.
That was Matthew Cunningham, Kyle Hunter, Sawyer Henson, and David Miller performing as Foggy Bobcat inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF. Foggy Bobcat will perform tonight at George's Majestic Lounge on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. Fort Smith singer-songwriter J.D. Clayton and Joplin-based rockers Me Like Bees are also on that bill. Tickets are $12 at the door. Music starts at 9:30. You can find out more about the band at their Facebook page or at foggybobcat.bandcamp.com. Contributors to this Friday edition of Ozarks at Large included Jacqueline Froelich, Timothy Dennis, and Zuzana Sitek. Zuzana provided information and sound about the Go With The Flow block party taking place Sunday afternoon in Fort Smith. Timothy Dennis also mastered our show today. Thanks to Becca Martin Brown from the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette for her help. She'll be back with us for our next show. That's Weekend Ozarks at Large, Sunday morning at 9 on 91.3 KUAF. Daryl Sean wrote our theme. It's called The First Hurrah. You can learn more about Daryl at his webpage, darylshawn.com. His most recent album is titled Safe in Sound. He's often performing live on his Facebook and Instagram pages. All right. Thanks for listening. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Mena. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. I'm Kyle Kelms. Thanks so much for spending part of your Friday with us. We're back Sunday morning at 9 for Weekend Ozarks at Large. Back with The Daily Show Monday at noon and 7.